I'm going to start my sermon with an apology to any members of the choir who are present and to the pianist, and you'll see why. I'm going to be singing a little song, and if you recognize where it's from, just give me a smile or, you know, wave your hand a little bit. Making your way in the world today takes everything you've got. Taking a break from all your worries sure would help a lot. Wouldn't you like to get away? Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name, and they're always glad you came. You want to be where you can see our troubles are all the same. You want to be where everybody knows your name. And of course, for those of us who are old enough, that came from the sitcom Cheers. It ran between 1982 and 1993. And if you saw that program at all, who could forget Diane and Sam and Carla and Woody and Norm? And what about Cliffy the postman? And those were folks that were not our social media friends. I don't know about you, but I have a lot of Facebook friends that I haven't seen in many, many years. And sure, I want to share things with that circle of people, but those friends just can't substitute for the people with whom I have a regular face-to-face discussion with, including looking as best we can for truth and understanding in this very troubling world of ours. It strikes me that I'm not alone, that that's what brings a lot of us to a Unitarian Universalist congregation. According to the latest census population estimates, there are 6,097,684 people who live in the Washington metro area. There are 1,142,234 people who live in Fairfax County. And there are 27,822 people who live in Sterling. You might think that with such a large number of residents, it would be easy to meet people and make close friendships. But my husband and I didn't find it so. We both commuted a long way to work, and we had our children's needs to attend to when we got home. We found it hard to establish close friendships with our friends at work because so often they lived in another state or another county or another city. Without any relatives nearby, finding a group of people who share a lot of the same values and beliefs as us became much more important than it used to be when we lived in the Midwest. From the UU website, I found this statement. In Unitarian Universalism, you can bring your whole self, your full identity, your questioning mind, your expansive heart. I noted on your website that there are loads of support groups, spiritual groups, there's a book group, there's a lunch group, there are probably committee meetings that go on quite often. And I'm guessing that each participant brings his whole self, his or her questioning mind and full identity to those gatherings. And I'll also guess that in those smaller groups, nobody needs a name tag. Church, or in your case, a congregation, and I'm going to use those words interchangeably, I believe that church exists to remind us of what is important in life and to help us lead a more authentic life. Together, we create a force more powerful than one person or one belief system. As Unitarian Universalists, we do not seek our personal, we do not leave our personal background and beliefs at the door. We join together on a journey that honors everywhere we've been before. We gather and worship to find meaning and live more deeply. Worship creates connections within, among, and beyond us, calling us to our better selves, calling us to live with wisdom and compassion. One part of taking care of our own and community is how we treat each other, when we work together, when we discuss issues, when we disagree, when we decide, when we win in a congregational vote, and when we lose. If we can always treat each other with respect and with kindness, if we're able to avoid taking things personally and to assume good intentions, if we can forgive each other and ourselves for our very human feelings, we'll embody the highest goals of our church community. In a book which was titled A House for Hope, The Promise of Progressive Religion for the 21st Century, by John Burens and Rebecca Parker, both who were our Unitarian Universalist ministers, they write about grappling with the tensions that are inherent in our sense of ourselves as individuals, with the ability to make choices about the ways we will live, and the fact that none of us humans can survive without being part of a community. Starting with the undeniable helplessness that characterizes human babies, we need one another. As fundamentally social beings, we need each other both to survive and to thrive. But here we are, each in our own skins, feeling rather separate, rather unique. We each have our personal combination of talents, abilities, limitations, and temperaments. And we know that communities and their institutions can be oppressive and abusive. History is full of cases in which institutions, including, of course, religious institutions, have suppressed knowledge, stifled creativity, and punished innovation and dissent. They have betrayed the ideals they profess in order to promote and sustain their own power. And yet we are still social beings, and we've gathered in religious communities since time beyond reckoning. Rebecca Parker asks a crucial question. In that book I noted, she asks, is it really preferable or even possible to be religious alone? Or is there an importance to religious community life that needs to be claimed anew while protecting against the liabilities and dangers that community life can pose? It's no surprise that she argues for the importance of religious community. She asks, how can we approach religious community in ways that promote not competitive parochialism, but authentic interfaith engagement and cooperation? Parker lifts up two claims for progressive congregational life, which offer reasons religious communities are very important. First, congregations can be communities of resistance, countercultural habitations in which people learn ways to survive and thrive that can resist and sometimes even transform an unjust, dominant culture. Can be, not will be. Becoming resistant to the norms of our culture is difficult, even when we have articulated the ideas we support and the changes that we want to see. Cultural pressures are very pervasive, especially now with our myriad ways of spreading information and staying connected. Our congregation can help us sort out the various voices and decide which are aligned with our ideals. Together, we are more able to act on those ideals. As individuals, even when we're convinced of the principles involved, we may be intimidated by a climate of community opposition. In a sermon by UU minister Elizabeth Lerner Maclay, she says, as drops of rain that find each other and build to become a track, a rivulet, a stream, a river, a sea, so are we drawn together. So are we very fortunate to find one another. So are we bound together. My husband and I have been very fortunate to have visited Northern California on several occasions and seen the giant coastal redwood trees in Muir Woods, just north of San Francisco, and also in a private extensive garden near the very small town, small California town of Fort Bragg. Of course, these trees are known for their height and width, but get this, they come from a seed no bigger than the seed of a tomato. Maclay states that you would expect that each of those trees would have a root system that would go extremely deep into the ground and that would spread in every direction as they move deeper and deeper to support such an immense tree. The depth of the root has a lot to do with the size of trees in most cases, but not for the redwoods. Their roots are relatively shallow. What allows them to grow to the size they do is their roots are all connected. It's impossible to tell where the roots of one begin and another ends. They can grow to a size and magnitude that is unmatched because they're drawing life from the trees that are around them. If you dissect the early church or any healthy ministry today, you'll find that the reason they can support growth, the reasons that they minister in ways that seem to stretch beyond their means and abilities is because for that group of people, their roots run together. They draw off one another, and it's hard to tell where the strengths and abilities of one ends and another begins. They have learned the value of togetherness, of being connected. Unitarian Universalist congregations have dealt with this issue of connectivity. We use the democratic process and establish self-governing, independent congregations that covenant about the ways we'll treat each other and live together on this planet. We don't unite around a set of commandments or required beliefs. But even with these safeguards, our suspicions of authority and a bit of prickliness around preserving individual options often means that we keep our congregations and other institutions small and relatively weak. We tend to underfund them, yet we complain that we aren't as influential as we would like to be. I think UUs have often overemphasized individual options and underrated the benefits of community. We've let our distaste for the abuses of other churches and other times make us overly suspicious of our own. If we want to influence our communities, if we want to enjoy that life-sustaining interdependence that Parker claims, we'll have to make deeper, caring commitments to our congregation. You know, we use the word church in different ways. It's a place, like I'm going to church. It's a building or a group of buildings, as see you in church on Sunday. It's a larger institution, like the UUA or the Methodists. But even more, it's a group of people covenanted to work together as we explore the questions of human living. Gathered here in one strong body, we sing some Sunday mornings. It's ways similar to the ways our cells come together to make something larger. We bring ourselves, our hopes, our ideals, our energies, and our questions to form the community that is this congregation. It includes our different viewpoints and perspectives, our foibles and our failings, right along with everything else. Despite the difficulties of living in real communities, the ones we quirky humans form, our congregations offer the possibility of life-sustaining interdependence. While we are individuals, we are neither isolated nor completely autonomous. Our religious communities broaden our vision, remind us of both our aspirations and our limitations, and strengthen us for the challenges of our days and our work. And now, my colleague Joanne is going to share with you a few examples of how our own church community at Accotink was particularly supportive of its members.
Good morning. It's good to be with you here today. As my partner Paulette quoted from the UUA website, in Unitarian Universalism, you can bring your whole self, your full identity, your questioning mind, and your expansive heart. And to me, that expansive heart part, that's the most important part, because it's the element of that list that makes us care and embrace the broad spectrum of selves, identity, and questions that we as Unitarian Universalists are so proud to include in our communities. And our whole selves include not only the gifts we bring to help our communities and keep them running, but also our wounds, our struggles, and our brokenness. It's by engaging with others in our communities that our broken selves are made whole. When we repair ourselves with the help of friends, it's like practicing the Japanese art of kintsugi, the technique of gold joinery. The kintsugi artist repairs pottery by filling the cracks with a precious metal. And the truth is that pieces repaired by this method are actually more beautiful than they were when they were new. I had a direct experience with this when a friend of Akating Church, Mary, became ill with pancreatic cancer. Mary was a much beloved physical therapist, and for years, she supervised the largest group of physical and occupational therapists in the state of Virginia. I, as an occupational therapist, had been under her wing for a few years. When the therapy community found out she was ill, her former employees formed a group called Mary's Mob, and we mobsters would take turns sitting with her, reading her beloved Pearl S. Buck stories aloud, helping her with small daily tasks that she had led us to help so many in the community in the past. It was my privilege to listen to her one evening when she reviewed the evolution of her ideas about God and finally came to the conclusion that she didn't feel a need for a God at that point in her life. She died not long after, the day after Thanksgiving, 2009, surrounded by three generations of her family. Soon after Mary died, her husband gave away some of her things in preparation for moving to his new home. I chose two small sauce dishes that said on the back, made in China, because I knew that they had lived in various places throughout Asia earlier in their marriage, and I wanted to have that memory of them. But not long after I got them, I knocked one dish off a windowsill onto a granite countertop, and it was suddenly seven little shards. So, not wanting to part with them, I found a simplified kintsugi repair kit, and here is a photo of what has become one of my loveliest possessions. Just a reminder of how much opening up to others can help us become more beautiful. Kintsugi, as a metaphor for our broken selves, has become quite popular, and maybe you've run across it on the internet, but please allow me to read one of my favorites. It's from a blog called Beautiful Boy, More Than an Addict. It's by Jim Kontopoulos, who writes, "Kintsugi is a beautiful and accurate metaphor for our lives. When we view our lives and those that surround us as being of great worth, yet broken and shattered from trauma, despair, hurt, fear, abuse, failure, addiction, disease, and even death, we see ourselves accurately. As we do, we open up for others and ourselves the opportunity for beauty to transpire, for the artisan's skilled hands of repair, for a community to build." Mary's life was extremely meaningful to many, many people, both in the strength of her contributions and in her openness for others to allow us to repair herself. My little dish is just a tangible reminder of that. I often think of another example of folks making a struggle with brokenness into an experience of wholeness, and that's the example of Greg Cox and his wife, Pam. The Coxes were longtime members of Akating. She was a nurse, he was a rocket scientist. He had the t-shirt to prove it. It said, "Actually, I am a rocket scientist." And he often wore that shirt while mowing the church lawn, which is a big job at Akating. We have 11 acres, some of which are very steeply graded. Sometimes that job took over Greg, and he ended up somersaulting one of our cantankerous lawnmowers down a hill, and There were jokes about how Ralph Nader was going to save Greg's life by requiring that all riding lawnmowers would have roll bars. But at one point, we suddenly lost a House and Grounds chair, and Greg immediately stepped up. He did that despite having his very responsible day job, which took him out of town almost every week. Sometimes people, including me, were frustrated when Greg would call House and Grounds meetings and not show up because of an unexpected work trip. One Sunday, during Joys and Sorrows, we learned that Greg had a rare form of cancer. Over the next 18 months, there were treatments that helped a lot, and we were all jubilant. But there were also treatments that seemed to take a lot out of him, but didn't help much. Greg had lost his first wife to cancer, and when it became clear that his death was within weeks, he told Pam that this was going to be harder for her than it was for him. Soon after that, Pam arranged for a celebratory potluck gathering with Greg Cox that was held at the church. I still have the invitation. It asks for notes and cards that would be assembled in an album at the potluck. The family brought photos and memorabilia from Greg's life, including the I Am a Rocket Scientist t-shirt. It was a wonderful experience because we could tell Greg exactly what we remember about him, including his acrobatics with the lawnmowers, but more importantly, his grace during that final illness. The notes and cards poured in, complete with hand-drawn hearts and arrows at the bottom. We shared food, music, and hugs with Greg there in our beloved community, in body and spirit, one last time. It was like a cup of Maxwell House coffee with lots of cream and sugar, bittersweet and good to the last drop. Accotink had been a community of relatively young families and government career folks for its first 25 years, but Greg's death was one of the signs that we needed to be ready for all of life's experiences. He and Pam showed us that even the most difficult of times could bring us together as a community if we could open up to each other as individuals. Our minister at the time, Rebecca Benner, saw that it was the right time for us to form a pastoral care team of lay people who could lead the way in becoming a community where we would minister to each other. One of our members had been part of such a team at a neighboring church, and she brought some best practices to us. Our pastoral care team meets regularly. They practice with each other the deep listening that they offer to our community. The team continues training on various issues, and it identifies resources in the wider community for the needs of our congregants. At Accotink, we keep the idea of spiritual support separate from the idea of practical assistance. As a faith community, spiritual support is one of our core missions. And Accotink is large enough as a church that we can offer some rides, meals, childcare, emergency funds, and other practical assistance for a limited time. But we do refer members and friends on to professionals for longer-term practical and expert assistance because those things are beyond the scope of our organization's ability to provide. Our pastoral care team is now a decade old and still learning from every new challenge. One of the most important truths about being a community is that helping those around us benefits both the giver and the receiver of help. This is a reality brought to us from many sources. I'm partial to neuroscience, so I always remember the father of modern affective or emotional neuroscience, Jaak Panksepp, who has documented 7 innate emotional systems. 2 of these are the care system and the panic grief system. And interestingly, Panksepp says that these systems are reciprocal. They're antagonists. So when our urges to care are activated, our panic and grief are reciprocally deactivated, and vice versa. This is a wonderful system that allows us to flexibly take care of both ourselves as individuals, but also nurture those around us. Those are only the scientific confirmation of wisdom from many sources. For example, Booker T. Washington tells us, "Those who are happiest are those who do the most for others." And the great soul, Mahatma Gandhi, gave us, "The best way to find yourself is to lose yourself in the service of others." But my favorite quote right now expressing this wisdom is from the military science fiction writer John Holmes. Holmes writes, "There is no exercise better for the human heart than reaching down and lifting people up."